Podcast League Recap. We had a great draft last night. I got to say, the listeners really stepped up. They did an outstanding job, and we'll talk about our draft and not just what, you know, who we picked and what our teams look like, but lessons learned and things you can take into your drafts this week and this upcoming weekend. I'm Adam Azer here with Al Melchior, Scott White, Heath Cummings. We're all on the show today to talk about our teams, to talk about position battles, roster spots that are being won, demotions that we're seeing, and some ADP differences. If you're drafting on ESPN or Yahoo, Heath has done some excellent research to tell you about some ADP differences, things that might help you out. Good morning, guys. How are we doing out there?
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, thank you. I want to shout out to the Brew League. We got an email this morning from Dennis from the Brew League. They're based out of Topeka, Kansas. So, all right, Heath, Midwest here. They're holding their 35th annual auction this weekend. That's pretty impressive.
Wow.
That is almost exactly in the center of America.
That's right.
And this weekend, they are the center of the fantasy baseball universe.
Well, I thought, you know, we should answer a question from Dennis since he's doing his 35th annual auction. So Here we go. Who are the top five players that will start in the minors but will be up by May 1st?
Ooh, that's early.
Maybe we should go round table here.
That's really early.
Yeah. I think, it's not clear he will start in the minors, but if he does, I think Sean Manaea. Hope I got that right.
Oh, you saw that email we got, Al?
Yeah, I did.
We got an email from a gentleman from Hawaii who says, everybody is mispronouncing Sean Manaea's name, calling him Sean Manaea.
But ultimately, what really matters is how he says it.
Right, which I don't know.
Yeah,
that's right. we'll have to ask Matt Diaz.
Matt Diaz or Dan Ugla.
Yeah.
And it's always an inside joke with the Marlins commentators, because when Dan Ugla first came up, somebody tried to convince them it was Dan Ugla based on, where the name originates. But that's not how Dan said it, so
no,
who cares?
I will say Baseball Reference also has that wrong, if it's wrong.
That was what threw me off at first, was Baseball Reference. If I'm pronouncing it wrong, incorrect.
I know in Kansas City, it was when he was with the Royals organization, it was always said Manaea. Not that means anything. We say lots of things wrong there, but, the problem I have is if everybody is going to call him Sean Manaea, and we're the only ones calling him Sean Manaea. I did that, didn't I? Sean Manaea?
You just did.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not bad. Well, look, we don't have to worry about him at least until May 1st, right? But you guys think he could
right.
be up? He could be up by then?
I think it's possible, yeah. Especially if one of those athletic starters gets off to a terrible start. Not naming any names.
Anyone else?
Han?
I'm feeling pretty good about A.J. Reed's chances of being up that early
if
he doesn't make it out.
He's been sent down.
Yeah,
right?
He's been sent down.
Oh, yeah, he's been sent down. Okay, so he won't be up for the start of the season.
So
but I do think there's a good chance.
Yeah.
I mean, it may be mid-April even if they follow the Chris Bryant plan. Kind of depends on some extent how Tyler White does. But I'm making sure I stash him at least in roto leagues where the roster size is bigger.
That was the one I really wanted to say, Scott. I should have jumped in really quickly because I did not have a backup plan in hand. I mean, there's lots of guys. I just – May 1st.
I mean, that's early. I don't know that there will be five notable prospects.
Yeah.
I mean, Jose Berrios is going to be one of the first five impact players up, isn't he?
Yeah,
probably.
But I doubt he's up by May 1st. They've got six starters now, so two of them are going to have to fail probably.
Well,
they probably will.
Yeah.
Robert Stevenson could be up for the very start of the season.
He just had a really bad start, right?
Stevenson? I'm not sure. No pitcher for the Reds had a good spring at all.
They were kind of saying yesterday it was supposed to be a statement, and he, tried to win that spot in the rotation. Looks like he gave up three runs in the first inning and five overall. So he might be a good one. Not start with the club and then, or John Lamb or Cody Reed.
Well, it sounds like they need him for the third game of the season, Stevenson, but then there's a good chance he'd go back down and maybe come back up. And yeah, I don't know that I'm particularly excited based on the way his spring went, though.
All right. So we really don't have any major names that we know are going to be up by May 1st. That's a pretty early timetable. But of course, like last night in our podcast league draft, Tyler Glasnow, Lucas Giolito, those guys got drafted. AJ Reed, I think, got drafted. Did AJ Reed get drafted last night?
He did.
So, yeah, those are the big names you need to know.
And Tyler White did not. Interesting.
Yeah, it's a shallow format, you know. No,
but it's one that he should do very well in.
Because of the walks. Walk
strikeout rakes, yeah.
Right. So, anyway, Scott stole four guys from me last night in the draft. That was pretty messed up, Scott White. You had the second pick overall. I had the first pick. And, yeah, you...
We all had players stolen from us. This is, I know, really boring and banal, but, you know, these guys drafted really well. This is probably the most balanced podcast league at the start that I can remember.
Yep.
There may be a couple teams that look a little weaker than some of the others, but nobody had a team where it was just like, what is this guy doing?
Who looks weaker?
I'm not going to say.
Come on. You were trying to make it not boring and not banal.
Well, isn't it banal?
The truth. I think so.
While we're on these...
I was just going to say it like Scott said.
Oh, well. Okay. Thank you for that correction, Adam.
No problem.
My mispronunciation was so awkward.
Yeah, I was going to let one go, but then when Heath jumped in there, you know, Heath was the troll. Yeah. Heath put a poll up last night on Twitter. Who should I troll in the draft room? I got 74% of the vote. But you didn't really go... You went sort of easy on me, I guess. So I thank you for that, Heath. It wasn't that bad.
There was one point when Scott stepped in and told me to stop trolling you, and then I was nicer after that.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Scott, then. I appreciate it.
Did I do that? I don't remember
The funny thing was that poll only got 264 votes, which is kind of a lot. Al got one vote, and that was himself. Al was the only person to vote for himself.
You voted for yourself, Al?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
I didn't want to be at 0%.
I didn't want to get shut out.
Well, I did troll Al a little bit because there was one pick that Al made. I really like Al's team, but there was one pick that he made that I did not like at all. More on that in a bit. So, if you're drafting on ESPN or Yahoo, Heath has come up with this handy-dandy list of players that CBS is higher on or lower on, and just in terms of ADP, which you can see on fantasypros.com. So, okay, here are three guys, Heath. Zach Greinke, Ian Desmond, Anthony Rendon. That have higher average draft positions on CBS than they do on ESPN. So these guys are going later in ESPN drafts than they are in CBS drafts, and they are Zach Greinke, Ian Desmond, and Anthony Rendon.
I feel like they all, for me at least, fall in different categories. Greinke is somebody I've been saying I'm not going to draft at all. And if I had seen early on that everybody's average draft position was the same as the way he's being drafted at ESPN, then I might be okay with drafting him at the end of the fourth round. I'd feel much better about it than I would at the middle of the third. And I guess the point of doing this was I did my first draft on a different site this past weekend, and I noticed there were players that normally I don't want any part of, or guys that I'm normally targeting at certain places, and then when I saw their average draft position, I was like, well, I don't have to take them now because the average draft position says they're going to fall for another six or seven rounds.
Right, right.
And it was kind of ridiculous. Ian Desmond, I'm still not really that excited about taking 143rd because I still have to start him, and I don't really want to do that. But Anthony Rendon, I guess that's because they're projecting just based on his disappointment last year, but that's a huge difference.
Right. I don't think I said the difference. He's going 63rd in CBS leagues, Rendon, and 128th in ESPN leagues. So you're talking the 11th round there in ESPN leagues.
If I was drafting on an ESPN league this week, I would not wait until the 11th round to take Anthony Rendon, but I'd take him in the 9th or 10th and feel like I just stole something.
Right. I mean, at least this way you know that you can wait longer than you
right.
would otherwise.
This is all roto, right?
Yes.
That these numbers are for? Okay.
Yeah.
Scott, let's look at the guys that are lower on ESPN than they are on... wait. So, okay, I'm sorry. They're going earlier in ESPN drafts than they are in CBS
drafts. Right, their ADP
drafts.
Is lower.
Yeah, their ADP is lower. So, Scott, you can analyze this list here. David Peralta is 82nd on ESPN, but 149th on CBS. David Ortiz. Now, this one I can explain. David Ortiz, 56th on ESPN, but 96th on CBS. Oh, actually, no. I'm thinking of Yahoo, because Ortiz is first base eligible on Yahoo. I'm not sure if he is on ESPN.
And but, there's a number missing on Polanco that should say 91st.
Okay, Polanco's 91st on ESPN, 122nd on CBS. So Peralta going much earlier. Ortiz going in the fifth round. On ESPN, 96th overall on CBS. That is the ninth round.
Mm-hmm.
Gregory Polanco, 91st on ESPN, 122nd on CBS. Scott,
I feel like I feel like the differences are understandable for these players. Certainly the first two, Peralta and Ortiz. I'm gathering from this information that ESPN's projections are much more focused on last year than maybe ours are. Cause I feel like these are probably projections based differences. I mean, projections are usually what are funneled into the draft room. And so that kind of determines to some extent the order in which they're drafted. And I should point out that, you know, none of us do projections anymore. None of the three of us do. Those are come through Sportsline now, which, you know, does a lot of good work. It predicted some great upsets in the early rounds of the March Madness. So I don't know why I put a D in front of March Madness.
The March
in front of March Madness. that's probably the difference. But Peralta, I mean, the percentages were awesome last year. Is he going to regress some with the batting average? Probably, looking at that BABIP. I do think, you know, I 82nd would be too early for me to take him. But there's reason to be excited about him. David Ortiz, honestly, I think he's going too low on our side. I understand he's 40, but he was 39 last year. He was 38 the year before, and there was no regression at all. So I think based on just the level of consistency there, even 56th overall is going to be a value for what he gives you.
Okay, let's take a look at Yahoo now. And if you want some values on Yahoo, Heath has found three guys that are going much later in Yahoo drafts than they are in CBS drafts. They are Carlos Martinez, who's going 81st in CBS drafts, 121st in Yahoo. Carlos Martinez, we love. Michael Franco, 70th on CBS, 123rd on Yahoo. And Jung Ho Gong, 146th on CBS, 210th. In Yahoo. So Carlos Martinez, Michael Franco, Jung Ho Gong, you can get good values on those guys. Al Melchior, what's your response?
Well, in the case of Gong, that's going to be difficult because he's going so much higher on CBS than on Yahoo. And I find myself restraining myself because I'm actually wanting to take him earlier than I need to. Yeah. Heath's laughing.
He doesn't make it past 110 anymore.
Yeah.
In our dress.
No.
Yeah, because Heath is there, and Heath's even more aggressive on Gong than I am. So that's, you know, that'd be a tough one for me on Yahoo. But Franco's kind of an interesting one because I never dropped Franco in a CBS league. And my opinion is, I guess, more in line with Yahoo's. So I'd actually maybe have a chance at the Yahoo league of getting Franco. And Carlos Martinez, I think I'm probably more in line with the CBS projection there because 121st pick overall, so outside the top 10 rounds seems like a bargain that's just too good to be true for Carmart. Yeah.
And then finally, Heath, we got three guys who are going earlier in Yahoo leagues than they are in CBS leagues. Justin Verlander, 86th overall in Yahoo, 143rd overall in CBS. Charlie Blackman, 27th on Yahoo, 41st on CBS. And Prince Fielder, 43rd on Yahoo, 99th on CBS. That one I can't explain. That is a first base eligibility thing. He is first base eligible in Yahoo leagues. And Fielder's going about 50 picks more than that earlier. So it's Verlander, Blackman, and Fielder that you get better value in CBS than you do in Yahoo.
Right, and I think the one that's interesting to me is Charlie Blackman because he's somebody that's fallen to me. And it says 41st here. That's the fourth round. I've gotten him in the fourth round in two or three drafts here recently, and I feel like that's a steal. But drafting on Yahoo, you're not going to be able to count on that. Looks like he's going early third round, which is about where I have him ranked, but it's not going to be a value anymore.
Okay, guys, let's take a look at the big injuries here. Matt Harvey, he went with the seventh pick of round four last night after Gerrit Cole, after Chris Archer, before John Lester. We don't know much about Harvey. He may not be ready for opening day. It's a medical issue. It's not a baseball-related issue.
I think we have newer information this morning, actually.
Okay, I missed
Heath
it. Go
was telling
it.
Me about it before.
And this is courtesy of CBS Local in New York.
Okay. Ooh.
And apparently he had a procedure to alleviate blood clots in his bladder, which sounds awful. But they're saying that he is now expected to make the opening day start against the Royals. So I wonder if he had the procedure yesterday and some of the question marks yesterday where they just weren't sure exactly how it was going to go and everything's gone okay, so it shouldn't be an issue anymore. But either way, it sounds like it's positive news. I wish I would have known that when we were drafting because I passed on him when I wouldn't have for sure.
I think you had to. That was pretty – they were being so cryptic about it,
right.
You know? And
which blood clots are scary.
And – Yeah, and then there was this whole connection where his last spring start, he suddenly lost like several miles per hour on his fastball between one inning and the next. Yep. So it seemed...
May have happened right then.
It seemed like there was some disaster potential to drafting Harvey, but this is good news. And even if he doesn't quite make it back for opening day,
right?
It means he's not going to be out for an extended period of time. So I don't think it really changes where you draft him now, knowing what it is.
I think that's also a good time to remind people that they should check their league settings. Because Harvey's opening day is on Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and there are some leagues where it looks like the first day of the season is Sunday, and some where it looks like the first day of the season is Monday, because most leagues run Monday through Sunday.
For CBS, I think it may be a default to include opening night, because
okay.
every league I've checked so far includes Good. It.
Roto, it is a default. Head-to-head, I think it isn't.
Ah, okay.
And you may have checked the leagues we're both in, because yeah, I think Sunday night I went through and made sure they were all set for Sunday.
Okay, that would explain it.
Yeah.
Okay, then. We got Cleveland right fielder Lonnie Chisenhall on the DL with a wrist injury, which means Marlon Byrd and Jose Ramirez could see some time in right field. Yasmani Grandal, Howie Kendrick could both start the season on the DL. Doesn't mean they'll be out long. And I don't know, you think Grandal is going to become a value now, a bargain on draft day?
I mean, he could, but I'm part of the crowd that is avoiding Grandal now because I just worry for a catcher that a forearm issue is kind of a big problem.
As Jubal Cabrera looks good for opening day, Garrett Cole, he might not pitch opening day, but he still could be ready for week one. He got a late start to spring training, Garrett Cole, because of his rib injury, but he's rounding into form and should be fine early in the season. Yasiel Puig returned to the lineup for the Dodgers. Javier Baez could start the season on the DL for the Cubs with a thumb injury. Kevin Gausman will start the year on the DL. I know Mike Wright is in competition to get into that rotation right now. It's not somebody they're going to be excited about in fantasy land. Jung Ho Gang played 5 innings in a minor league game, made some progress. Any interest in Dan Straley, who the Padres just acquired? Starting pitcher Dan Straley got him from Houston for catcher Eric Kratz.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering how likely he is to win that fifth spot for them, because Drew Pomeranz was terrible yesterday. I'd rather Pomeranz win it, because he has... I think he has more upside, and obviously he's relief pitcher eligible. Straley maybe, but... So that's something to keep an eye on, but I don't like the upside as much, and so I think he's more NL-only material.
And San Diego is scouting Pablo Sandoval for some reason, according to the Boston Globe. And James Shields, his name keeps coming up in trade rumors, so he might be on the block. I don't know why anybody would trade for Pablo Sandoval at this point, but that could not be bad news for Travis Shaw if you're looking at that.
That would be what would you have to do if you were the Red Sox to trade Pablo Sandoval for James Shields?
Include a lot of money.
Pay both of their contracts, and throw in a prospect.
Yeah, I mean, look, they have prospects that we know that.
Yeah.
No. Hey, Heath, I understand we have a big announcement to make.
We do have a big announcement. I don't know why in the notes for the show though it says Rejects League announcement.
Because if you haven't picked the name, then I don't know what to say. Like, that's on you at this point.
Not the Rejects League.
Not
is
Rejects
what it's going
League.
To be. Now, what we don't know for sure, I don't know if we have two big announcements or just one big announcement. Because I know we have the announcement of 9 people that are in this wonderful league that we'll draft on Thursday. I don't know if we have 9 or 10 spots, because one person is yet to commit that works for CBS Sports. So
well,
maybe
I'm in.
Yeah, you're in. Al, you're in, right?
I'm in.
Okay. Chris Towers is in and I'm in. So we just haven't heard from the other person.
Listen, I'm going to take Scott off the hook here.
Okay.
I have given him permission. He is not going to be in this league.
Okay.
So we decided that we would rather give this spot to another listener. So
okay. That name will be announced tomorrow.
Okay.
The final name. So Jacob Hall.
Oh wait, can we time out here? Jacob Hall, what? Just congratulations. But look, Heath.
Yeah.
This would really mean a lot to me. Let's see how nice you are. I'm in 2 head-to-head points leagues.
Right.
2 roto leagues.
Right.
1 head-to-head categories league. I would really like to make this a head-to-head categories league.
I don't understand you at all.
But it's this, like, this is the only format that we don't really, we don't talk about it enough. I think it would be good for our podcast to have a head-to-head categories league.
You're getting married, right?
Yeah.
You know what you need to do before you get married?
Join a head-to-head categories league.
No.
What?
You need to practice listening to what other people are saying and reading what other people say. When your fiance sends you a text, you don't just skim over it, read what you think it says, and then move on.
Okay, what are you?
Because that will get you in a lot of trouble. Because
maybe he's practicing with
her. If you go back to the original email that I sent you,
yeah,
you will see that I said this was going to be a head-to-head categories league. When we had the announcement on the first podcast that we talked about there being a not rejects league, I said it was going to be a head-to-head categories league.
Oh, really?
You mentioned in the draft room last night that you were making an executive decision, I said we'd already decided that it was. I've told you three times that it was a head-to-head categories league, and you just brought
it up.
It sounds
like you're married.
That is so funny. I don't remember any of these communications. And last night I was busy. I was trying to make dinner while drafting, so maybe I just missed. Because of the burritos, I missed what you had said. But all right, fine. Head-to-head categories league. Heath, thank you so much for heeding my request and making it a categories league.
You never even had to make it.
Now, who else is in the league?
Okay, so Jacob Hull obviously got a we've got a couple people here that have sent us emails, but I've used their Twitter names and not their emails because I couldn't find the emails after I got back to it. That sounds official, right?
Yeah.
Alexandria Yard. Hashtag team diversity.
Okay.
Elliot Smilowitz.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Matt Kozlowski. Kim Olson. Dave Scaff. Captain Dylan Narang. We've got a co-managed team between Nick Kroll and Yo-Yo Jin on Twitter.
Oh, those two. Those two rascals.
And Jenny Butler.
Great.
So congratulations to all of you. You will be getting an email today. If I said your Twitter name, then you're going to have to send me another email because I don't know your email.
And from what I understand, this will be a head-to-head categories league. So
this will be a 14-team head-to-head categories league with quality starts instead of wins and on base instead of average.
You know what? I can't not do this league. I can't. I know we just promised another unnamed listener a spot.
This is Scott turning heel.
Yes, I'm going to jump. If you'll have me. If you'll have me. If you don't want me now, fine. I won't do it. But I got to be in this league. I know too many of these names. I feel like I'd be letting everybody down.
Let him in. Let him in. Scott, you're in.
Okay.
There we
good
go.
Stuff.
Thank Executive
you.
Decision.
Yeah.
Okay.
Miss you.
Let's talk about roster spots. Roster spots. Washington sent shortstop Trey Turner to AAA. Danny Espinosa will be the opening day shortstop. How about, you know, one or two sentences of analysis on everything I say here. Al Melchior, Washington shortstop.
Dusty Baker hates kids. One sentence.
Okay, what about the few? Like, do you think Turner will come back up at some point? Do you think he's the guy?
Oh, there's one of the April ones, right?
Maybe. Maybe, but I wouldn't put him in the top five even. I don't know who's going to be top five. Yeah, I think Turner will be back up at some point, just maybe because of injury. But I think the chances are less here than with many other organizations.
Logan Forsythe will be Tampa Bay's leadoff hitter. That could help his value a little bit. Scott White, you seem to like Forsythe.
Yeah, but I don't really care that he's batting leadoff. I don't know that it's going to make a difference because last year he hit cleanup a lot of the time.
Okay.
So it may mean, I guess, fewer RBI, more runs. Other than that, not sure what it changes.
The big key with Forsythe is can he hit right-handed pitching? That will be the key to whether he is any good this year or remains a leadoff hitter. Either
what?
Way.
Wait.
He's never hit right-handed pitching
okay.
in his career. Last
so why
year
was he bad. Last why wasn't year, he bad last year?
Last year he did because he had a high BABIP with no ISO and no slugging against righties. So if he does something besides hit singles or hits a bunch of singles again, then he'll be good.
Okay. How about Corey Dickerson and Steve Pierce? Do you think they could platoon at DH? Read something about that on ESPN yesterday. Corey Dickerson platooning with Steve Pierce.
Well, definitely makes sense from the Rays' perspective. I don't think it's really great for either of them from a fantasy perspective, although it should improve Dickerson's rate stats, but I don't think that's really, you know, we're really too happy about that.
No. This is my biggest fear with Dickerson, less so than him leaving Colorado, is all along I've been worried about how much he'll actually play for the Rays.
The nice thing about being a left-handed hitter in Tampa Bay in a platoon that can also play the outfield is at any point, Corey Dickerson's still probably going to play in most every game. There's very few games where it's all left-handed pitchers. And if they bring up in a right-handed pitcher in the seventh or eighth inning, Corey Dickerson's the best pinch hitter in the league.
They also have Logan Morrison, so like he's, I think, a better option to be platoon than Corey Dickerson. I'd rather have Dickerson in there than Morrison.
I wouldn't think they would start Logan Morrison every day and bench Corey Dickerson for him. I don't know what Morrison's better at.
Well, you know, I think Cash likes to platoon. I haven't seen the data, but that's my perception of it. And they've got enough depth that I think both Morrison and Dickerson could lose at bats.
Well, yeah, I mean, is Logan Morrison going to be a regular part of the lineup against right-handers?
According to roster resource, he is.
Okay. But it could be James Loney. It could be, I mean, I assume Steven Souza's in. I don't know if roster resource shows that.
Oh, no, they don't.
Yeah.
I would assume Steven Souza's in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, by the way, we have the upside-o-meter coming up later. We'll talk about Steven Souza. Anthony DeSclafani has an oblique strain. He might miss a turn in the rotation. Raisel Iglesias is your opening day starter, and as we mentioned, Robert Stevenson might make a start in the first turn for the Reds, and we'll see about DeSclafani's injury. Al, I saw you tweet something about Juan Nicasio maybe going to the bullpen.
Well, it's not clear what Nicasio's role is going to be. So it's not that I think the Pirates are leaning that way, but if we're just assuming on the basis of a very strong spring that Nicasio is going to take one of the spots in the back of the rotation, you might be assuming too much.
He went we had waivers run in every league last night for the first time. For all these leagues we were drafting in like late February, early March, before Juan Nicasio was a thing, he went for a lot of money in all of them. So I just think that's worth interjecting. People are still excited, but like Al says, it's far from a done deal. Yeah.
And along those same lines, there was a tweet that I retweeted yesterday about Trevor Bauer not having a rotation spot yet. So no indication that he is going to the bullpen or that he isn't. But the Indians have lined things up that it looks more likely that Cody Anderson might get a turn in the rotation initially than Bauer. But Bauer pitches today, so that could get cleared up.
Okay, some fifth starters. Matt Shoemaker, Robbie Ray, Nate Karns. Shoemaker for the Angels, Ray for the Diamondbacks, Karns for the Mariners, as James Paxton was sent to the minors. How would you rank those three as either late-round flyers or AL-only, NL-only options? Shoemaker, Robbie Ray, Nate Karns.
I believe I have them Karns, Ray, Shoemaker.
I have them Ray, Karns, Shoemaker.
Okay. Yeah, I have them ranked like Heath, but I do think Ray has the most upside of the three, so I could go with Al on this.
Okay. And then finally, we talked about them yesterday. Aaron Sanchez, Vince Velasquez. Sanchez in the Toronto rotation is going to have an innings limit, might go back to the bullpen at some point, and Vince Velasquez in the Phillies rotation. They are relief pitcher eligible starting pitchers. They were both drafted last night. In fact, Velasquez, it was a very, very good draft last night. I thought Velasquez might have been the biggest reach in the draft. More on that
in a second.
Hold on, let's get back to that in a second, because it's Team Name Tuesday! And the first team name that I want to talk about is in our podcast league, which was just so strong all around. I mean, even the team names were great. And I was watching this god-awful show last night while I was drafting, but shout out to Verlander Pump Rules in the podcast league for the Vanderpump Rules. That is outstanding. And also, Holy Smokes was very funny.
Why, thank you.
Is that you?
That's me.
Oh, you changed your team name.
I did from last year's.
But last night you were Fancy Triangle Sandwiches, weren't you?
Well, that was from last year, and then I changed before the draft.
Yeah, I saw it showed up in my draft room as Holy Smokes. Maybe you never refreshed after you changed it.
I think Adam and I were in the draft room before he changed it, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, Deho Lee is a Mariners first baseman that's going to be hitting against lefties when Adam Lind is out, and now Melchior's Holy Smokes was spelled like Justin Smoke. So, very good, Al. I like it. Here's some other team name Tuesdays for you. From Gabe on Twitter. I turn my head and I cough. Like, I cough?
That's a good
I laughed.
One. Yeah, that works. I was actually trying to think of an Eichhoff angle the other day, and I didn't come up with one that good. So,
this one appears to be a political one from Mark Haskell.
Oh, good.
Franco-American vote.
V-O-G-T.
Yeah, V-O-G-T. Yeah. Okay. This one I like from Tim. Naquin and Afraid.
Ah.
I like
that. I don't know that I could escape the NyQuil connection to Naquin, but he did it.
Yes.
Yep.
So good job.
From Phil, we have the Trevor ending story. It's good. It's clever.
Yeah, I feel like that one's...
We've gotten that one before, but yeah. It's very good.
It's the best one so far.
Oh, yeah. Okay. From Jordan, Brains Over Brawn. Brains Over Brawn.
If there was a Brains, I could go for it, but there's not.
Joey Brains.
It's yeah. Really beginning to feel like we've exhausted all of the good team names.
The team names are tough, yeah. From Clay, he says, last week someone mentioned how y'all needed to stop saying Rich Hill's name, and Al said really quickly, Rich Hill, Rich Hill. Took me back to Seinfeld immediately. Rich Hill, Rich Hill, a young girl's strange erotic journey from Milan to Minsk. I don't even remember the Rochelle reference, but there it is. Rich Hill, Rich Hill.
And then I think it crossed several episodes, didn't it?
I think so.
Yeah. I'm not really, I really like Seinfeld. It's amazing, but I don't know it as well as most people.
Me too. I'm with you, Adam.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Heath, you and I are simpatico today, but I really think that you should make the Rejects League a head-to-head categories league. Just consider it.
I will consider it.
And from Thomas, Tanaka knock joke.
Come on. You guys are better than this.
What did you think about my team name in the draft yesterday?
It was fine. I mean, I wish I could have had the first overall pick.
I did have the first overall pick, completely chosen at random, I promise, and my team name was, you know, you make me wanna trout in all caps. And here's the thing, I really didn't know until about 5 minutes before the draft if I was gonna take Trout or Goldschmidt. This is an important lesson here.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? I had the same. I was picking second, and even though Harper is my number one, I was debating it right up till the last minute too.
Did you have a Goldschmidt name lined up?
I didn't. So
that's why you took Trout?
That's totally no. So here are two reasons why I took Trout. Well, first of all, okay, I had the first pick. It was a 12-team league, so obviously I had the 24th and 25th picks as well. And I think we've talked about this ad nauseum, but top 7 first basemen. And for me in a points league, I would say it's really top 6 because I don't want Chris Davis.
Right.
I could be wrong about that, but I'm willing to be wrong about
that. No, I'm with you.
Yeah, and you know, and knowing that you have the same draft philosophy as me, Scott, and we're picking second, I thought even less chance of getting that elite first baseman. But anyway, I was sort of leaning Goldschmidt because I thought I could get a better outfielder than first baseman at the end of round 2. But I thought to myself, you know, if Mike Trout has a historic season, just one of the best seasons in baseball history, and I think he's capable of doing that, and I don't know that Goldschmidt is, I'm going to really hate myself for not taking Trout. So I said, let's not overthink it. Let's just take Mike Trout here. And I did. And I got a little lucky because I was surprised, Scott, you passed over Jose Abreu in round 2 and I got him with the 24th overall pick and felt much better about my decision. But it leads
Chris,
me to my
Chris Bryant was there to me second last pick in round 2. And I thought that was just much better value than Abreu, who by the way has similar plate discipline issues to Chris Davis, so it's really not a great format for him either.
Really? I mean, he's not a 200 strikeout guy.
Jose Abreu.
Well, Chris Bryant.
Right, but I'm Chris Bryant strikes out a lot too, but I just mean in the aspect from in the respect that Abreu strikes out like 100 more times than he walks. So
Chris Davis though.
Right.
You know.
Right. I'm just saying that it's really that disparity between strikeouts and walks that'll drag down a hitter's value in head-to-head points more so than just the strikeouts in and of themselves.
All right. Well, that's a fair point. But it did lead me to this. Like, you know,
he did strike out 122 more times than he walked last year.
Abreu?
Bryant.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, weaker position.
Well,
and he hasn't peaked yet, so.
All right. Sorry. Listen, I just want to get this point in here.
Sorry, go ahead.
You know, you sit there and you fret about not getting an elite first baseman if you're picking early in the first round. But you do forget that a lot of times owners that don't work for CBS will take pitchers before, you know, before we advise. And this wasn't even bad. There were only five pitchers that went in the first two rounds. I think usually when we draft and we do like an in-house mock, there are, I don't know, 3 to 5. So I guess I wasn't shocked to see Abreu fall, but I was a little surprised. But I think you might have a better chance than I've been letting on because people take pitchers earlier. So Kershaw, Scherzer, Arrieta, Bumgarner, Sale. Kershaw, Scherzer, Arrieta, Bumgarner, Sale. They went in the first two rounds, and Abreu and Chris Bryant fell a little bit. All right, I'll let you guys speak here. What stood out to you? I have a lot of things that stood out to me in the podcast league draft, things that I think could really help people in this head-to-head points format and more. But I'll open it up to you fellas. What do you want to highlight?
Don't all speak at once.
One of the things we talked about before, Adam, was how it seemed like outfielders really fell.
Yeah.
Especially really good outfielders. And that was kind of highlighted by George Springer falling to the end of the third round, Starling Marte falling, to the...
Beginning of the fifth round. The beginning of the sixth round.
Beginning of the sixth round. And it's not like they were the only two. I told several people good pick based on outfielder picks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I took Jacoby Ellsbury. You know, not like I love him, but last pick of the 10th round. That was late. Dexter Fowler I took in the 17th round. So it just was not a big priority for people in this draft. Every draft has its own little quirks, you know?
Yeah. I think what we saw with that was that's such a big tier of outfielders, the Marte, Braun, Cespedes, Cargo tier, that nobody wanted to be the first to dip into it, especially since most of those guys are bad plate discipline guys, which is not so great for this format. And it's also a three outfielder format. So we were kind of all on the same page that we just didn't want to go after that too soon. We wanted to fill the other spots first. And I actually think that's a reasonable approach to take in this format. Cause part of the reason I was debating Goldschmidt or Harper at the second pick was because I was worried that somebody like Mookie Betts would be the ideal person to take with the second to last pick of round two. And I'd have two outfield spots filled already, two of only three. And I just hated the idea of doing it that soon. Now it didn't happen.
Right.
I was worried about that.
I worried about that a lot earlier in the year, and I've kind of gotten over it. I seem to be filling outfield in the seventh or eighth round a lot of times, and all that means is I'm just a lot better than most everybody at outfield. And that's
but
okay.
There's so much value to get at that position late.
Well, like, yeah, but
I don't think it makes for the most fortified roster you can possibly have. Even if some of the individual picks are technically good value, it's just not.
But value in the
eighth
round
is not a good distribution across positions.
Value in the eighth round is value too.
Yeah.
So if you're getting somebody like Michael Brantley or Yasiel Puig or somebody like that in the seventh or eighth round as your third outfielder, I don't think you just don't do it just because you want to take a bad outfielder
later. You don't do it, but that's not the ideal setup, I don't think.
I'm not so sure. I mean, I've always thought that you don't want to plug up that third outfield spot too quickly, especially if you filled your DH, which in my case I did with David Ortiz. But I did fill my three outfield spots pretty quickly. In the first two, I went early with Chris Davis and then Nelson Cruz, again, because I liked the value on Cruz at that point. And when I got later in the draft and I saw the players I would normally look to as a third outfielder, like Yelich, Kevin Pillar, I mean, those guys all went pretty late, and I didn't feel like I missed anything there.
You're also talking about best player available a lot of times when you're talking about these outfielders. You're sitting there in round 7 or 8, and you just don't love, you don't want to take a second baseman there. You don't want to reach for Kipnis or something like that. You don't necessarily want to take a third baseman because it's Beltre or Seager or something like that. And then you see a guy like Yasiel Puig, and you're going, you know, if things click, like I could have an NL MVP candidate here. And you can't get that at other positions. So that is a delicate balance of not filling up outfield too quickly because there are good ones that you can take late, but also not passing up on guys that can win you fantasy, even in the shallow format, especially where you want just elite players whenever you can get them. Outfield provides you that opportunity.
Speaking of not taking a second baseman, I thought that was one of the other weirder things. D. Gordon and Robinson Cano both went in the fourth round. Rougned Odor went in the fifth round, and Brian Dozier went in the sixth round in a points league.
Well, I can tell, I can talk about that actually, because I took Colton Wong with one of my last picks as my starting second baseman, and I've spoken about this before. I really like drafting Addison Russell because he's eligible at shortstop and second base. And I took Addison Russell a little bit early, last pick of the eighth round, so I could have taken him with the first pick of the ninth round. I don't think I would have gotten him if I had waited 24 more picks, so that's why I reached for him. But in doing that, when you draft Addison Russell, you know, you can sit back and you can look at shortstop and second base and just wait and wait and wait and take the best available shortstop or second baseman, because Russell's eligible at both positions. And it increases the pool of players that you can take late. So for me, it was between Wong and Pedroia. It was tough for me. I actually wanted to take both, but Pedroia got taken before my next pick. And I went with Colton Wong and, you know, getting a start in second baseman. And if I have to go to waivers, I'll go to waivers. When did I take Colton Wong? That was the 18th round. So that's why I like drafting Russell. And in this format, I mean, people probably aren't going to take backup middle infielders, or at least not that many people are going to. So you can afford to wait,
At second base in particular. And I know I've stressed the point many times that in this format that doesn't require a third middle infielder in your lineup, second base is the position to wait at, because there's more than 12 starting caliber. I mean, Heath referred to some of the early round values at the position. I thought some of the late round values were even crazier. Dustin Pedroia went in the second to last round, and he's been a starting caliber second baseman for as long as anyone can remember. And I think I got Joe Panic in round 17 or 18 as a second baseman, because I had already drafted Jason Kipnis at, I think, a good value, but more in the middle
round.
That one
really pissed me off, Scott. I'm not going to lie. That was the end of round 10, and I was about to take Jason Kipnis, and you threw my whole draft into disarray. When you took it
forced
there.
You to take Wong late.
Yeah. But well,
I like messing you up, Adam.
It forced me to take Drew Smyly because I just couldn't think of anyone else. And then you took
and
Steven
I wanted
Matz.
Drew Smyly. So,
you took Matz after that. I missed Matz. I for some reason, I guess I just didn't see him. I would have taken Matz over Smyly.
Yeah.
So good job to you. All right, Al, I'm going to call you out. You ready?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I really like your team. I mean, you have a solid team, but you took David Ortiz. So you plugged up your DH. And then in the 15th round, you took Victor Martinez. And I thought that didn't make sense for your squad to get a second DH eligible only guy and to do it in round 15 where there's still a lot of good players left.
Well, there were still, and this is part of the rationale for me doing that, was I thought there were still a lot of good players left at the end of the reserve rounds. I had guys in my queue. I wish I had a few more spots to take with, and it was just strictly a value pick and not, you know, thinking of filling a hole in my roster at that point. I needed to get a fifth starter, I think, still at that point. Second base may or may not have still been open, because that's right around the point where I took LeMahieu. And at second base, you can wait and wait, and there are plenty of equivalents to LeMahieu that are out there, plenty of equivalents to any fifth starter I would have taken. So I saw V-Mart out there and thought, you know, I may never play him, but if he establishes value, he'll be a great trade chip.
Do you regret your pitching, Al? Because you only have one bench pitcher. This is a format where I feel like you kind of want bench pitchers and not so many bench hitters. You have four bench hitters, and you only have one bench pitcher, and it's Phil Hughes. What do you think about your pitching? All right, your pitching looks a little light to me, Al. I'm not going to lie. I'll read your staff. It's Lester, Verlander, Iwakuma, Hendricks, DeSclafani, and Phil Hughes as your starters.
Yeah, it's definitely the weak spot of the team. I don't love it, but I'm okay with it because I do really like my hitters, and I think it's a lot easier to rebuild your pitching on the fly in a head-to-head points league than your offense. And I typically do stream one or two starters every week. I would have liked a better 1-3. I don't really have a problem with having a week 4 and 5 because they're not going to start every week for me.
So you're going to have to release some hitters at some point to make streaming possible.
Or rotate a pitcher, right? I mean, I've only got the one pitcher. So yeah, right. In all likelihood, I will. And my hitter bench is Devin Travis, Trevor Story, Jackie Bradley, and V-Mart.
Yeah, I mean, Travis is going to go in a DL spot right away, so that'll free up a starting pitcher spot for a seventh guy. And Desclafani, is Desclafani going on the DL with the oblique injury?
He may start on the 10th, but obviously if he aggravates it or if it's worse than they thought, then a DL trip could be possible for Desclafani. But most likely in week one, I'll plug Hughes in there and put Desclafani on the bench. But I'm not worried about it. I can build depth. I can trade or drop some of those hitters. Jackie Bradley is completely an experiment. The last hitter I took, you know, if he gets off to a bad start, I could see dropping him.
Yeah.
So I'm not too worried about it. And the selection of Hughes as my last pitcher was very intentional too, because in a roto league where I might look for a sleeper that's got some strikeout potential, Hughes with the great control could be a big time innings eater and be kind of a Sonny Gray light. And he could be somebody that could be a mainstay for me in this league if he gets back to where he was 2 years ago.
Sonny Gray light. That makes me think of Sonny Delight. Has anybody ever liked Sonny Delight?
Oh, yeah. I liked Sonny Delight back in the day.
You got over it pretty quickly, right?
I don't remember ever not liking it, but I've not had the urge to buy it since... Yeah. At least since I had kids.
Exactly. I have a little portable, I don't know if you call it travel, whatever, like the little single serving bottle in my desk.
Yeah.
It's just been sitting there because I don't want it. I think we should try some Sunny Delight after the podcast.
How long has it been in your desk?
Oh, only like a couple weeks.
I think we should probably, just for the purpose of sanity, to keep it clean, we should probably put some, what has cleansing power? Like alcohol.
Oh.
We could put alcohol in it just to make sure that it's safe for consumption.
Well, actually, I don't think I've ever seen a fantasy baseball team name involving Sonny Gray with Sonny Delight. That's a good one.
That's true.
We've stumbled upon.
I don't think it would work.
Well, if you really like it, you know, just saying you like Sonny.
So Sonny Gray Light?
No, just Sonny Delight. Just Sunny with an O.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's okay.
I think it's very good. I'll read the rest of Al's team. We'll read all of our teams. But Al, he mentioned his bench hitters. They're Devin Travis, Trevor Story, Jackie Bradley, and Victor Martinez. And his pitching staff is Lester, Verlander, Iwakuma, Hendricks, DeSclafani, and Phil Hughes with David Robertson and Sean Tolleson. And his hitters, very good lineup here, Lucroy, Encarnacion, LeMahieu, Donaldson, Crawford, Chris Davis, Nelson Cruz, Shin-Soo Chu, and David Ortiz. Got some mashers there. Mm-hmm. Before we get to the other teams, closers. Just such a different approach in this head-to-head format than Roto. So in this league, you only need to start two relief pitchers. There are 12 teams, so that's 24 relief pitcher spots that are being started. Some people will take backups. But when you bring in the starting pitchers who are eligible as relief pitchers, or the SPARPs as we call them, Vince Velasquez went in round 9. Aaron Sanchez and Tanner Roark went in round 15. So now you're adding three names to the mix. And I just think it, unless you get a great value, and Heath will disagree because he took Wade Davis, and he took a backup closer, Andrew Miller. More on that in a second. I'm not going to say that it makes sense to wait. I always do. But you can wait until your last two picks and you can get two guys who are starting closers with a job. Like, Scott, who did you get? I know you got Glenn Perkins, who I really wanted, and who's your other closer?
Jake McGee, who isn't for sure. I mean, that's partially an upside pick, but Jason Grilly's out there. Jeremy Jeffress is out there. There are other closers available if McGee doesn't secure the job in Colorado.
You can definitely wait on closers. And then I think, considering where Andrew Miller went, Heath, you took him in round 20 of 21.
Right.
And the lack of urgency at closer for what I was just talking about, I think it's a very viable strategy to take Aroldis Chapman, and with one of your last two picks, maybe last three picks to be safe, take Andrew Miller. Heath, you took Miller without having Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah, I just thought I might as well get... I think he'll be better than Houston Street for the first month of the season. There wasn't anybody else out there that I thought, this guy is definitely going to make me better for a month. So I took him and figured I'd be a little bit better, and then when he's not the closer anymore, I'll just put Street in.
All right, let's talk about our teams here. And I'll read, some listener teams as well. Scott, you had the second overall pick. You want me to read your team, or do you have it in front of you?
You can read it.
Okay. So he took Bryce Harper and Chris Bryant and Buster Posey. Those were Scott's first three picks with the second overall pick. So, Posey, Hosmer, Kipnis, Chris Bryant, Corey Seager, another pick that I dropped an F-bomb when you made. Bryce Harper, Michael Brantley, Gerardo Parra, and Denard Span. Posey, Hosmer, Kipnis, Chris Bryant, Seager, Corey Seager, Michael Brantley, Bryce Harper, Gerardo Parra, Denard Span, with Ryan Zimmerman and Joe Panik on the bench. And the pitching, a lot of upside here. I think your hitters are your strength and your pitchers, we'll see. Carlos Carrasco, Noah Syndergaard, Steven Matz, Taijuan Walker, and Matt Moore, with Mike Fiers, Gio Gonzalez, and Jason Hamill, very late good pick, on your bench, and Glenn Perkins and Jake McGee. So any regrets, anything you would do differently, or do you like? I like your team. Very good.
Yeah, I do like my team. I think it would look a lot better if Al didn't snipe me on David Ortiz, who he may not end up needing with Victor Martinez. So that's annoying, because right now I have Denard
Span. Do you like to trade?
I do like to trade. I have Denard Span in my utility spot. I might have to move him to the outfield and put Joe Panik in the utility spot with Michael Brantley beginning the year on the DL, but This is a really strong offensive team, I agree, especially when you consider I have far and away the best catcher. I mean, it looks good offensively even without considering Posey. And it's, you know, I haven't built so many of those teams this draft season like I have in the past because I've been so much more focused on starting pitcher. But generally speaking, starting pitching went a little earlier in this draft than it had been in other drafts. So I was lucky to get Carlos Carrasco, the last of, in my mind, the ace caliber pitchers. I was lucky to get him toward the end of round four.
Yeah, and I was going to take him if you didn't.
And then I went ahead and took Syndergaard early in round five because, you know, even though he's just outside that elite class for me, it's mostly because he hasn't really had a full major league season yet. Obviously, last year he performed like an ace caliber pitcher, so I think he could be, he could still be that caliber of pitcher. And, you know, then beyond that group, there wasn't really anyone at starting pitcher I felt was worth reaching for. So I just targeted upside, like you said. I think there's enough depth here to make up for the lack of security. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to be kind of like Al, streaming some in the beginning until it's clear that I have a reliable five, and, you know, I'm always going to insert two start options as needed. So I feel okay about the pitching staff. I feel like, you know, if I didn't get either Carrasco or Syndergaard, if I didn't have that true number two, I'd be a little scared of it. But I like the upside, and I think there's enough to carry me in the beginning as I'm sorting through the waiver wire and some of my bench options, trying to come up with the best all-around staff I can.
Yeah, and I'll read mine now because, you know, Scott and I had back-to-back picks. I was first, Scott was second, and we took a slightly different approach to starting pitching. Scott and I, you know, I've learned a lot from all of you, and, you know, I have similar philosophies to all of you. So, I thought we would come up with fairly similar teams, and the only difference is I did take a pitcher with one of my first three picks, and, you know, I was thinking about going hitter, 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 and then grabbing two pitchers in rounds four and five like Scott did, but instead I decided not to gamble. I didn't know who would be there at the end of round four, beginning of round five. So I took
that was a good call in retrospect. Grabbing Price.
Yeah. I mean, look, if I didn't take Price there, maybe I get Carrasco and you take whoever, you take the pitcher right before Carrasco.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Maybe it would have pushed everybody back a spot. Right. I see what you're saying.
Right. So I took David Price in round 2-3. Anyway, my first three picks were Trout, Abreu, Price, and my team is Salvador Perez, Jose Abreu, Colton Wong, Matt Carpenter, Addison Russell, Mike Trout, Ryan Braun, Jacoby Ellsbury with Adam Eaton and or Dexter Fowler at utility. And then I have Price, Hamels, Michael Wacha, first time I've drafted him, Liriano, Drew Smyly, Scott Kazmir, Lucas Giolito, Lance McCullers, Trevor Bauer, and then I have Papelbon and Doolittle. I like the team. I don't love it, but I like it. I mean, again, it was a really good draft, so I don't think there's like a super team. And
well,
no, you haven't gotten to Heath's yet.
Heath's is good. I mean, I think Heath definitely has better hitting than me. I think I have better pitching, But let's take a look at Alcee Dazed and Gong Fused. It is a solid team name, Heath.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Travis d'Arnaud, Anthony Rizzo, Jose Altuve, Kyle Seager, Ketel Marte. Excellent infield. George Springer, Starling Marte, Gregory Polanco, and of course, Kendrys Morales at utility.
Big Ken.
And a smart pick of Jose Reyes at shortstop to back up Ketel Marte. And of course,
the 19th round?
Yeah, that's a good one. And of course, Alex Gordon, a Royal on your bench.
Nice pick. Thank you.
Your pitching is Jose Fernandez, Sonny Gray, Raisel Iglesias, Tyson Ross, and Andrew Cashner, with Ian Kennedy, of course, and Jose Berrios. You have Wade Davis, Houston Street, and Andrew Miller.
You're supposed to say Wade Davis, of course.
Wade Davis, of course. So you have four Royals, of course.
And you've got the full-blown Sonny Gray. Discount version.
Right. Yes, I went ahead and paid up for full-on Sonny Gray.
Who kind of needed to.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's a really nice number two starting pitcher. I guess maybe Tyson Ross won't be a top 36 pitcher, but I feel like he's a great number three. Raisel Iglesias has number two upside as a number four. And then you've got the number five spot that you can put in whoever has two starts. Obviously I value the closer position more than everyone else here does. And, so I waited until somebody took a closer and then I took one of them. Like I pretty much always do. And I understand that there definitely are going to be closers on the waiver wire. There are going to be closers available at the end of the draft. But they're going to be considerably worse than my closers.
They are, yeah. That's true.
And it seems kind of like, and not in all leagues, because in the league I drafted on Saturday that had nothing to do with anything CBS, I couldn't hardly buy a closer. But in our leagues, it seems like closer is just a fairly easy position. You don't have to dedicate that many resources to guarantee you're going to be one of the best.
Well, especially in this format, and that was something, too, when we were talking about quirks of this draft, that I thought that drafting of relievers was very restrained and for good reason.
Yeah,
I don't think you can guarantee you're going to be one of the best, though. That's the only objection I have in this format. Because in Roto, it's a different story, because even if he doesn't get... You know, even if he doesn't luck into a high save total, he's going to have, you know, Wade Davis or whoever, Craig Kimbrel, whatever.
Okay.
He's going to have the low ERA, the low whip, the high strikeout rate for a closer. And that'll help differentiate him in Roto, I think, more than it will in head-to-head, where it's pretty much just a matter of how many saves he gets.
I do disagree with the notion. I totally agree for like 75% of the field, there's a lot of luck involved in saves. I disagree with the notion that if you draft an elite closer on a good team, you're lucking into saves. Those elite closers on good teams get lots of saves.
Not always.
I agree with Heath.
Well, it's okay, but it's not always true. They're never going to have like a 30 save season, but they might only get 36, 37, just being in the middle of the pack and in the category. And, you know, compared to somebody like, last year, Mark Melancon was the number one closer in this format. Okay. And none of us are even talking about him as an elite closer today.
Right.
You know, you had that year where Fernando Rodney got, like, but, 48 but, but no, but, or something.
But the Pirates won like 97 games last year, and Jeremy's Familia, I think, was number two, and the Mets won the division. I mean, again, I always say this. I'm tired of getting criticism for this, by the way, on Twitter, for all you trolls. Like, good teams, they get a lot of saves. It's not set in stone. It is not a guarantee. It doesn't mean that a guy on a bad team can't get a lot of saves. But wins equals team wins equals save chances. You know, like, it's not.
It's not a perfect formula.
About matters of guarantees. There's a correlation. Nobody's denying a correlation.
There is no guarantee in this draft.
This is one of the looser correlations. K-Rod had 38 saves last year for a really bad Brewers team.
Yeah, but I looked at the top 10 2 years in a row, 2014 and 2015. The top 10 closers, and I think in points leagues, maybe Roto too, and there were very few in the top 10 that were on sub 500 teams. It does happen, but they were few. Now in the top 12, like you talk like 11 to 15, there were a number of them. But for whatever reason, maybe it was top 8. I don't know.
But how thick is that line? I mean, at the end of the day, if 38 saves versus 35 or 36, it just doesn't make that big of a difference to the bottom line of your team.
Look, you Scott, I'm not going to disagree with you
agree.
On that.
Because it's very unlikely you're going to get 35 or 36 saves from either one of your save positions.
All right, listen, we got to wrap it up.
Pretty much every full-time closer gets that these days.
I am sorry, guys, that we do have to wrap it up. I have a podcast to record 2 minutes ago. So, opening line, everybody. Take a listen. Al Melchior, Scott White, Heath Cummings. Do apologize for ending the show rather abruptly. I'm Adam Azer. Thanks for listening, everybody. Tomorrow, we'll get the upside-o-meter out. We'll read some emails and do a lot more here on Fantasy Baseball Today.